there is immense value in just going through your work, curating what you think is the best, pulling it apart, re-looking at it, re-editing it, getting it technically perfect, fixing it up, refining it, and then getting it printed or presenting it in a way that it's competition ready.
Hello and welcome to the Canon Convos podcast, where we talk to Australia's most inspiring photographers and videographers. Today we have newly announced Canon Australia ambassador, James Simmons, for round two on the podcast, and he'll be talking about the state of play in the wedding industry, our experiences shooting with the R5 1 year on since we started, the International Wedding Photographer of the Year Awards, which James is judging, and some tips on what he looks for in a great image. And we'll also be talking about the project plans he has with Canon Australia this year. Hope you enjoy. James Simmons in the house.
G'day, Jared. How are you, mate?
Going good. Going good. We're literally in my house this time. No, we were last time as well, but it's been a long series of Zoom calls and doing things over the network, so I'm quite happy that we're doing this face-to-face.
Yeah, a bit of in-person vibes have got to be good.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah, look at us, two newly announced Canon ambassadors.
Yeah, it's pretty epic news.
Great news. WA is really pulling its weight here in the Canon world. Glad to see it. You love to see it.
Yeah, there's a pretty heavy ratio with WA constituents, that's for sure. They must think we're all exotic or something.
Something in the water. So anyway, last time we talked was you were the first episode of the Canon Convos podcast, actually.
Yeah, about this time last year.
Things are pretty different back then, but also kind of the same. I feel like the same issues that we were dealing with a year ago are kind of still there. So that's not great, but things have surely got better. Because I remember we were talking about some of the challenges that were, you know, specifically facing what you do, which is weddings and wedding photography. So your industry was hit pretty hard. Everybody was scrambling, working out what to do in the face of, you know, everything being cancelled, basically. So a year on, how's it been? How did all of that end up panning out?
Well, yeah, same, but different really, isn't it? It's, you know, the COVID normal now, I suppose. We're still getting battered with the odd lockdown here and there, which sends everything into turmoil, and working in events, they're the first things to get cancelled, really. So there's still a lot of admin. There's still a lot of chasing your tail with things. There's still a lot of extra work to be done in reorganizing stuff. But I think everyone's just gotten used to that. It's really hard to plan anything now. So people are just doing it anyway and you know, dealing with it if bad things happen. So, you know, we've all had to, you know, pivot and twist and turn and try and make the best out of a pretty bad situation. But you know, the wedding industry, in particular in WA, was super lucky, you know, with how it was managed over here and how little spread we really had. Weddings kind of got back to normal relatively quickly. I think I pretty much started shooting almost normally back in September last year. And there was just the odd, you know, cancellation throughout that with people that wanted to still have big weddings and, you know, all of their guests couldn't come. So they kind of pulled out and deferred for a later date. But mostly, you know, people were just, you know, forging forward and, you know, maybe just rejigging what their weddings look like and kind of use it as a good excuse to do something a bit different.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more smaller weddings, a lot more unique little situations, lots of backyard stuff, which is really cool, you know, like you get to see a really personalized sort of take on the wedding scene and you kind of get to meet people's nearest and dearest or just their immediate family even, or their closest friends, you know.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. I've really enjoyed shooting the smaller weddings. It ended up being probably the busiest season we've ever had on record.
Okay.
We obviously had...
Because everybody's, like you were saying, they're being more spontaneous with things or...
Yeah. So last minute bookings, general new bookings, and then all the postponements from last year kind of piling all on, you know, early this year, March, April. I mean, we had that lockdown in February, which pushed a few of February's into March and April. And I think we shot 12 weddings in April and it just sent the backlog of editing through the roof. So
in a weird way, I kind of like it, what you've just said. I like how people are being more go with the flow, spontaneous, you know, kind of letting go of some of the pretense of, you know, we need to have 100 people at this wedding, friends of friends of friends, you know, I can't leave this person out, you know. You kind of, it just cuts to the core now and you know when you want to do it, you just say, let's just do it. You know, let's not wait. Let's not wait a year because who knows what's going to happen. We want to do it now. Let's just do it now.
That's it. Good excuse.
I kind of like it.
Good excuse to cut the freeloaders and the random plus ones and stuff like that, you know.
No, that's why I haven't been invited to many weddings lately. So when we talked before, we both only just used the R5 for the first time. And we only had maybe 48 hours each, I reckon, to use that camera.
Yep.
So it's kind of funny that we had a whole discussion on that earlier episode based on that. But now we've had a year, you know, working with these cameras. How are you finding it? What are your thoughts, R5, a year on?
Yeah, I love it, mate. It's, you know, there's obviously a few quirks with, you know, a bit of battery use and stuff like that, but it's really changed the way that I approach shooting, primarily with the tracking and the follow focus sort of stuff.
You're selling what I was going to say. That's exactly.
Yeah. Like that's
the main thing, I think, that has changed, like how using, which is interesting that a different machine can alter the way that you shoot. And it is, same as you through the tracking. I never used autofocus tracking before.
I had
a general distrust of any kind of, you know, tracking where I don't control exactly where it goes. But then, you know, that's my primary method now of focusing.
Yeah, it's good. It is pretty much trustworthy. It is pretty much trustworthy. Like, yeah, I wouldn't think twice. I mean, if it does kind of jump around a little bit every now and then, I have a couple of the different back buttons set up with the different focus mode so I can default to like single point.
Yeah.
You know, the old faithful kind of way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I've got the alternatives.
Which is good. You kind of got an arsenal there. You can just switch methods on the fly. It's good having those.
The way that I've got it set up with two different focus modes on the back can then be multiplied with a switch of single point focus and AI survey. So I've got the depth of field preview button set to switch between those two focus types.
Right.
And that changing that.
Don't use the depth of field preview button.
Oh my God.
I don't think I have ever pressed that. I don't know, mate. Like
back in film days, 100%, you know, check it out. But oh man, never ever. So yeah, like switching between the two then creates a different focus mode for those back two buttons as well. So I've basically got four different focus modes at my fingertips.
Great.
And
you'll need to teach me how to do that.
Is a game changer with weddings. Being able to, like, you know, chop and change throughout the different parts of the day is just amazing. You know, the response that you get from it, you know, it doesn't miss a beat. You know, you don't get any blackout from the EVF. It's quick. It's so snappy.
That's what I remember from the last podcast. You're just in love with the EVF.
Yeah. No, it's a vibe. It's definitely a vibe. Even at the lower quality to save a bit of battery, like I'm pretty good with that.
I didn't know there was a lower quality setting.
Yeah, well, it looks.
What
pretty,
is it? Does it like dim
good.
It down or?
It's a little bit more stuttery. Like it's not as fluid the movement.
Interesting.
You'd notice it a bit more that it's an EVF using it.
Right.
The full quality one is just, you know, close to perfection.
Yeah, cool. And how working with the files? Because you were big on that, on the resolution and the color and
Yeah, I'd really dig the playing with the files. They respond so well. I mean, I primarily mess around with images in Lightroom for workflow, and they're a dream to edit, really. There's so much detail, you know, that you can pull out from an image, and the color science, you know, they've just taken it to another level again. It was already good, and now it's just so close to perfect. It's a joke. So it's pretty exciting.
Nice. Yeah, I'm loving it. Especially with what I do. I guess it's similar to you. Like, we're always just carrying stuff around. So I'm loving how compact it is. You know, and I never used to kind of just one hand. You know, I've just got a hand grip on my body now. I never really used to just, you know, chuck a hand strap on and just like rock a one hand and shoot. But
you must
have been
doing
now.
Weights, mate, because the lenses weigh a ton.
That is true. The 2870, which is my primary one.
Do you YOLO
pretty
that with
hefty.
One hand?
No, yeah, that one's still... I can't do it for long. But, I mean, I wouldn't be able to... Like, my hand, just, I got a pretty small hand. I don't think it would even... I don't think I'd be able to do that with my old 5D. Whereas this one, I can just grip it and just run. I don't know. That's something I like about it. Well, cool. Two thumbs up for R5s then. This is also something that's coming up for you. You've been announced as a judge for the International Wedding Photographer of the Year Awards,
yeah,
which you have
yeah,
previously
yeah.
won.
Yeah, I managed okay. to snag the overall winner late last year.
Is that the requirement to be a judge? You win, and then now you're the Lord overseeing it.
I think each year the person or the team that wins ends up on the judging panel.
So they actually do that. I was joking, but
oh yeah, no, it's just
so you can't win it. You can't win it twice in a row. Then you're out of contention.
Yeah, I guess so. Got to pass it around. But no, it's quite an honor. It's a big award, it's Australian born. This set of awards. A guy from South Australia, Luke Simon, it's his brainchild, with a little bit of help from David Evans, who set up the Pano Awards. They're huge. They're like one of the biggest landscape competition online comps going around. So I think with a little bit of help from him, Luke's managed to put this system together, which is really, really cool. You know, it's looking at having people judge that are, you know, current, that have a bit of a different take on weddings, perhaps. You know, it's usually a quite diverse group as well. So it's a really good representation. And it's really, you know, becoming one of the, you know, premier comps, online comps in the world.
So. And I guess as a judge versus as a... contestant? I don't know what you would call
entrant.
It. Entrant. Yeah. How do you approach it? You know, what do you look for in the images that are coming through to you? Do you have a process in mind of how you would start to analyze or critique an image?
Yeah, generally. Usually all the judges will get briefed and they get a bit of a guide on, you know, things to look at, things to assess. What it comes down to is having the judge who's respected with what they do be able to find images that excite them the most. So there's a bit of a natural, you know, gravity towards some images for, you know, particular judges. So that's why you have a wide, diverse range of judges. Well, that's it. Yeah, some people are a bit more photojournalistic orientated, some people are a bit more stylized, but having those different vantage points and input really creates a well-rounded assessment. What I look for, there's three main things that I think make a successful image, especially for awards. So first off, the subject matter's got to be interesting. Then the story has to be exciting or say something, not necessarily exciting, but it needs to say something. And then the design of the image. So all the technical design elements, lighting, all that stuff. It needs to be visually appealing. And if you have those three elements, you create a wow image, something that you can't go past because it speaks to you on all those different levels. And that's really important. I think in that like awards competition environment, your image does need to have a bit of a wow element to stop the judge and allow them to kind of really absorb it. Because they're so inundated with images that are often quite similar or, you know, of, you know, professional standard, but nothing like super exciting, having that wow element will often, you know, that's super eye-catching, can stop people and go, oh, hang on, there's something extra here. And then the judges can really get into it a bit more. I mean, not every image that we shoot is always a wow image, but they're still important. But that's a definite tip for people wanting to enter awards. You know, it's got to have some sort of wow factor, and I think that helps in the judging a little bit. I do like to disseminate images and read into them and try and, you know, understand what's going on, why we've been shown this frame and what it's saying about the people involved, or, you know, what the photographer's trying to say or do with that image. And, you know, if people use different design techniques or, you know, use sort of metaphor, metonym, you know, irony in their images, you know, they're saying something at a higher level, and that often works really well as well. So they're probably the three main things we're looking for. But on a bare bones basis, like if you just want the wow, it's often composition, lighting that will start off with, you know, that will start the wow factor, but then the information and the story needs to follow through.
Yeah, nice. And is that the way you approach your photography anyway? Are those the same three things that you would have at the forefront of your mind when you're putting together an image?
Yeah, as a higher level, but that's a lot. You know, when you're just trying to get
to have that on every image.
Yeah, yeah, if you had that in the back of your mind every time you took a photo, sometimes you'd just never
you just wouldn't click the button. So I suppose that's what's different about, you know, entering a competition or putting some work forward to be judged or to be critiqued.
Yeah,
it's not you putting through a general representation of your work. You really are fine tuning it for the specific format that is to be viewed in.
That's it. It's probably got to be a little bit more iconic than kind of the fat middle of your work,
yeah,
I suppose. I mean, it'd be great if we could all shoot those perfect images all the time, but sometimes they're few
and between. Yeah, and that's what makes them special, I suppose, yeah. It's those rare moments that you really feel like you've done something special.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, you listen to some of the Magnum photographers and they'll say, you know, you get a good image every 10,000 frames. And you know, like, oh man, that's about how many I shoot at a wedding. So you should only get one at least.
One per wedding.
But no, I think there's different levels to it. Like, I think I always try and tell a story, but you've got to have at least one of those elements. Otherwise, it's a nothing shot. So it's either interesting information, you know. So if you're shooting some details at a wedding, you know, you've got some stuff that kind of looks nice. So you can either work with the composition and the content, but there's not much story. I mean, you can build story into it by adding a human element, but it's a pretty superficial story, you know, or you can kind of go towards the ultimate, just the content and the story, and not worry too much about the perfect composition and the perfect lighting. You know, if it's just someone's brilliant reaction for something happening, you know, it's super fleeting. Obviously, you don't want to throw your whole compositional rules completely out the window, but sometimes just getting a good reaction is better than not getting it all, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, there's a bit
of... Yeah, so there's a few different ways that you can attack this and approach this. And actually, in general, what would you say is the value of entering competitions or putting work forward to be critiqued? Because it's not something I do a lot. I used to earlier in my early days. I think I won some sort of Canon competition maybe 10 years ago. But over the years, I've kind of, withdrawn a bit from the idea of, putting work forward for somebody else to decide whether they like it or not. I was like, not so much for me anymore, but maybe. I mean, you're starting to convince me to like look into this kind of thing again. But you're quite involved with AIPP awards and this and in general, what do you see the value in it?
There is immense value in just going through your work, curating what you think is the best, pulling it apart, re-looking at it, re-editing it, getting it technically perfect, fixing it up, refining it, and then getting it printed or presenting it in a way that it's competition ready, because it's a level of detail that we don't normally go to. It might be a bit different with, if you're shooting a billboard or something like that, that's got to be presented pretty well, or like, going hardcore in that commercial space. But often we'll shoot these images and we get them to a certain point, which is acceptable as a professional. But rarely do we dig deep and curate our work to see what the best of the best is. Wedding photographers might do it once a year when they do like a best of blog post or something like that. But that's just an effort of pulling out your favorite shots from the year.
You're not diving deep.
It's deep
into the pixels.
It's a deeper dive.
Okay. So as part of the ambassador program, the Canon ambassador program, we'll both actually be doing working on a personal project or a hero project. Something that, we've always wanted to shoot. And now we can, with the backing of Canon, to help with some of the resources and things that are needed to get projects up. So can you tell me about what you will be working on?
Yeah, I'm super pumped to get stuck into a personal project. It's been a little while for me. Like, once you get wrapped up with weddings,
It
kind of takes over, and trying to fit anything else in usually suffers. So like I used to travel a lot and for personal projects and try and meet people and photograph really interesting portraits. It started off with this alone series. It started off outside, trying to capture, just people in the landscape. And then it moved inside when I was in India, just because the street was too busy. So like I wanted these sole figures, but it was just too busy to capture sole figures. So we found ourselves inside and photographing these interiors. And I was heavily influenced by Gregory Crudson when I was going through university. So I kind of was looking at a lot of that work at the time and started to employ a few techniques, not dissimilar. I mean, it wasn't on 8x10 film, but, just layering up different exposures. And and that's something that I kind of want to carry on, shooting these interesting interiors. And what I've found that I think would suit that sort of work was the old fisher shacks or the squatter shacks on the Batavia coast. So my parents live up in Geraldton, and when I've driven up there, there's a little place called Knobby Head that you pass on the way up, and you can see these old fisherman shacks. And I've always wondered what they're like inside, who lives in them or who uses them and so forth. And I've decided, I'm going to go find out who these people are, what their lives are like, and see if I can engage them and shoot some really interesting portraits and try and capture the essence of their story, in a series of images. We've highlighted a few different areas that we want to kind of explore, one of them being the Abrolhos Islands, which poses quite a few logistical challenges because you can't actually, go out there unless, you've got a license have a license on a shack, or you've got a fishing license that allows you to be out there. So that might have a few interesting logistical challenges. Then there's, the Knobby Head ones on the coast there. But then closer to home, there's Wedge Island, and the grey community, just north of Perth, 150, 160 k's north of Perth. You would have seen the Save Wedge Island stickers.
Think so, yeah.
On the back of everyone's cars.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit.
Is this near Lancelin?
Yeah, yeah, just north
of
that.
Yeah, okay. I think I know. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So we're in contact with the different shires and advocate groups and stuff to see if we can get a little inroad and meet some characters, and then hopefully get in contact with those characters and see if we can do some really cool images of them in their shacks. You know, it's about the connection between them and their space mostly. But no doubt they've got some weird and wonderful stories as well. So yeah, looking forward to sinking my teeth into that.
Yeah. Seems like you've picked quite a challenging subject here in terms of access, or, you know, you're kind of coming in cold here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what will make the images a little bit interesting is because, you know, the access is difficult. Not many people, you know, get to shoot that sort of thing. So, That'll be half the challenge, and it'll be half the reward as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that's the value of doing something that is difficult.
That's right. Yeah, that's it.
Mm. And how helpful is it having the backing of Canon for a project like this?
Oh, hugely already. I mean, I sent around a bunch of emails. I've talked to a few people on the phone, but I've kind of got crickets, and I sent the Canon marketing department the same contacts, and they've managed to get in touch with some people, so they've been able to do some a bit of work behind the scenes for us already.
Great.
So that's helped out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think just having their production team behind it,
mm-hmm.
you know, it relieves a bit of the stress and the pressure of having to, you know, produce the whole production yourself, because yeah. it's a
and I guess, you know,
personal project. Yeah, you know? So there's.
And I guess that kind of removes that barrier, you know, the kind of the cost barrier of why it's hard for us to do personal projects in the first place. It's because there's always actual commissioned or commercial work that we need to be doing. And then you just don't have the time, or you can't afford to spend, you know, a couple of weeks away from your actual work to do something. So then when you have a bit of backing or a bit of funding from somebody, it actually brings it to life. It's like, oh, through. You know, yeah, like, and you're not losing money shooting a personal project, which is usually how it goes. Normally, yeah, when I think of doing a personal project, it means, okay, well, take time off work, spend all this money and not get any of it back. Like, that's what's in my mind with a personal project. And shoot something really cool that you really want to, you're passionate about, but you do take a hit in other areas when you do that. So by having Canon, you know, support us with these projects means that we actually can do them. So that's probably the most exciting thing about the ambassador program for me. It's just, yeah, having some help to get an idea off the ground.
Oh, 100%. Like, it's made me excited again about shooting stuff for myself, you know, like, whereas, you know, after shooting whatever, 3 weddings in a week, you kind of like want to put the camera down and be like, yeah, I don't want to see that until at least next week. And now I'm kind of excited. Like, I'm planning all these things and, you know, thinking about how we're going to light it and, you know, what sort of technique we're going to, you know, employ to like try and extract these stories from people and, you know, imagining how these interactions are going to play out and, you know, like what the end result might look like. It kind of gives me a big buzz, you know. It's kind of reminding me why I got into it in the first place.
Yeah. And it's real easy to forget that once you're in the throw of it. And there's just so much, yeah, like, I guess when work piles up and you're just going from job to job and it just starts becoming, well, a job. And, you know, at the start of your career, when you first start shooting, you're probably thinking, this is awesome. Like, you know, this is what I do for work. I love it. You know, when you're fresh, it doesn't really feel like a job at all. You know, if I can do this for the rest of my life, I'm not going to work a day in my life. And then slowly you're like, it's like, you know, like anything. If you don't set the time to do things that remind you of that first passion.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can get a bit jaded.
Definitely no complaints and being able to shoot images for a living. But yeah, being able to do stuff for yourself is definitely refreshing too. I think it will help going into next season as well, like having done something really cool. Nice. Like I'll be able to go into the next season, you know, knowing that like a bit more refreshed, like having a bit of a clean slate, having done something outside of wedding work, you know, it'll probably give me a different viewpoint to use, or, you know, I might even, you know, teach myself some new techniques, or, you know, I'll learn a few things along the way, which, you know, might inform my wedding work as well. And a lot of the time your personal work does inform your commercial work. So it'll be a good rejuvenation from that angle.
So you run a few workshops here and there, and now you have this ambassador role with Canon. I guess, what do you hope to impress on people that come to your workshops, or that, you know, are listening to you talk on a podcast? You know, what do you hope that they take away from like, I guess, your approach to photography? And obviously, you know, you've been chosen to be an ambassador because, you know, it is a role model position, and hopefully people look at your work and listen to your words and are inspired, or at least, you know, gain a new understanding, or some small, they just hear something like, and maybe it has this moment where like, oh, that's a really cool point of view. Like, maybe I'll try that.
Yeah. Well, I'm by no means a prolific educator. I have run a few workshops, but I guess I really enjoy passing on good quality information. You know, throughout my career, I've obviously learned a few things and a few tips and tricks and you know, a few philosophical things as well. So I think by sharing my experiences, my lessons learnt, you know, maybe the way that we approach situations, or, you know, lighting, things like that, you know, hopefully, you know, I can help inspire the next generation of image makers. I think the main thing is that, you know, people either, like, they get inspired by a story, they connect with it, or at least they can take away some practical tool with them. You know, so if you're getting any one of those things, you've had a bit of a successful interaction with people.
Nice. Well, looking forward to all of this stuff happening and your project. Good luck with that. I'll need a bit of luck with mine too. I'll talk about my one later, but it's gonna be a tough one, and really interesting too. So we'll probably have a chat later on about how we're gonna tackle our projects.
Can you hint? Give us any hints? What you're gonna do?
Hint. Well, it's not. It's focused on the stories behind scars.
I've got a savage one on my forearm.
This is an audio medium, but James is rolling up his sleeve. Whoa. Okay. All right, maybe we talk about this later. If you've got a cool story behind this. But yeah, that's my project. Yeah, you know, no real secret, but I'm just starting to work on it now, and it's all about exploring, you know, the different stories, because everybody has scars, as you have just demonstrated. I've got a bunch of scars. Everyone has these marks on their body, and often it can be a taboo thing to talk about, or something that you don't want to talk about because there might be a negative experience associated with it.
Yeah, but often, you know, significant scars have like life-changing stories as well. I know mine was big time. It's pretty much
why I
started photography.
Really?
It's literally my lucky break.
I feel like now you have to. I feel like now we have to talk about it. We can't end on on a cliffhanger. We've got like a minute left. Give me a 1 minute summary. Or if you think it can't do it justice, we'll have to save it for round three.
1 minute's fine. I got back from a soul searching 2.5 years away working in London, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. Went back down to my hometown in Margaret River, was surfing a notorious reef break, and got absolutely flogged on the reef. Snapped my arm like a twig. Luckily, I had a friend out there with me. He dragged me in, and my arm was just flopping about, completely broken, dislocated, and the forearm is disgusting. It was a long day, and ended up 2 weeks in hospital. They had to, you know, they couldn't close the wound. I got compartment compression syndrome. It was savage. Anyway, it hurt like hell. About 12 months of rehab, in that time, I went back home because I couldn't really look after myself, and that was pretty upsetting. But then because I was so injured, I had to think about what I was going to do, and going back and studying was pretty much the best option. And the only thing I was really interested in at that point in time was kind of image making, photography and video. So I started that and haven't looked back. And that's how I met Liv as well at uni.
Oh, wow. Wow. It all came from that. Man, okay. Well, look forward to seeing James in my project as a subject. All right, that was awesome. Thanks for coming in, man. Great to chat all things as per usual. It's always a good time.
It's a pleasure, Jared. Thanks for having us.
I'm sure there'll be a round three at some point. Otherwise, good luck with everything. That was James Simmons, wedding photographer and newly announced Canon Australia ambassador. You can check out his work at the links in the podcast description. Hope to see you next time. We'll be right back.